This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Hello, my fellow Americans. This is Washington Watch on Thursday, July 7th, in the year of our Lord, 2016. I'm your guest host, Ken Klukowski, Senior Counsel and Director of Strategic Affairs at First Liberty Institute, the largest law firm in the United States, exclusively dedicated to protecting religious liberty. So check out what we're doing there fighting for your rights at firstliberty.org. Also, Senior Legal Editor for Breitbart News Network, exposing the truth about the liberal left and telling you the real news that the mainstream media tries to ignore. Find out what's really going on in your country and impacting your freedom at Breitbart.com. But I'm not speaking to you today on behalf of First Liberty or Breitbart. Instead, I'm speaking to you as a husband, as a father, and as a citizen blessed to live in the greatest nation in the history of the world, the United States of America. We're going to be talking about faith, family, and freedom, and we want you to join us. So we're going to be taking your calls throughout the hour at 866-372-7234. Again, 866-372-7234. We've got two fantastic guests lined up joining us today, and as we cover each of these issues that impact you and what you care about and those that you love, we want you, the American people, to be part of this show. In fact, you are the most important part of this show. This show is ultimately about you, and we want you to join us. Now, some of this stuff is going to be hitting some political hot-bud issues, so let me say, as a lawyer who is sensitive to the legal realities of such things, let me add that Washington Watch and our related affiliates do not support or oppose candidates for president or for any federal office, for that matter. And the endorsements made are in that person's personal capacity only, or my personal capacity, and do not represent the views of the Washington Watch Network or pretty much anyone else, for that matter. So we're going to be turning to what we're looking at in today's show. We've got a fantastic show lined up. And later on this hour, we are going to be addressing the huge news out of the nation's capital today, just a few blocks from where I'm sitting right now, where FBI Director James Comey went before Congress and went under oath today to give an accounting for his decisions and recommendations yesterday with regards to the felony criminal investigation into the presumptive Democratic nominee for president, Secretary Hillary Rodham Clinton. And we're going to be talking about that in the second half of this hour, just as we were talking about it yesterday, getting some breaking updates from one of the leading edge journalists covering this unfolding train wreck of a scandal that the American people are having to endure after 20 years of Clinton scandals. They just keep coming. But before we get to that, I am actually happy to be able to introduce to you one of my friends and colleagues from First Liberty Institute, talking about a fantastic legal proceeding and perhaps soon to be federal lawsuit regarding just an unbelievable violation of religious liberty going on in the heartland of America right now in the state of Iowa. So joining us to discuss that is my friend Chelsea Heumann. She's chief of staff and counsel at First Liberty Institute, concentrating on religious liberty matters and First Amendment rights. Chelsea, welcome to Washington Watch.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Ken. I'm excited to be here with you today.
Now, you just returned from Iowa. You were in the Hawkeye State dealing with this situation on the phone. I know you had a big press conference there, I'm debating how much to set this up or just to let you go at it. Let me just tell our guests that there is. The state of Iowa has several years ago adopted a SOGI, a sexual orientation and gender identity law, that they added to their state's general anti-discrimination statute. You know, that's the state law that says you can't discriminate against people because of their race, their skin color, and that they've added to that, putting on the same level as racial discrimination, saying that that you can't make decisions about a person pertaining to their sexuality or pertaining to what gender they claim to identify with on any given day. And in just a few months ago, the Iowa Civil Rights Commission, which is the executive body principally responsible for administering this statute, they put out an informational brochure. And in that brochure, they asked themselves in print whether churches are exempt from this state's SOGI. And they came back saying sometimes, and then said that there were some instances where they are, but others where they are not. Now, I want to turn to Chelsea with that and just say this. I think people listening to that, they have to be saying, okay, maybe I misheard him. That can't be right. Because if they heard it right, their head's about to explode. So why don't you go ahead and lay it out for us?
Right. That is exactly right, Ken. So what we have here is an unprecedented mandate. Out of all of the First Amendment litigation we do here at First Liberty, we have never before seen a state government issue a mandate saying if a church even so much as opens its doors to the public for a worship service, just the general Sunday morning worship service, it's officially classified as a public accommodation. Now, what that means, not to be too technical here, is two things. For every church that opens its doors to the public on a Sunday morning, they have to allow transgender males to use female restrooms. So they're mandating, the operations of an internal church body, the restroom usage of that church body.
And Chelsea, let's make sure our listeners understand what kind of person you're referring to when you say a transgender male. You mean?
I mean a male, biological male who identifies his gender as that of a female is still allowed to use, under this mandate, has to be allowed to use the biological female restroom. So men in women's restrooms, if we break that down.
During a time when women can be present, including
women,
even children, including girls.
Yes. In fact, one of the examples in the brochure itself says that this you're subject to this if you have a child care facility. So, if your children go to a Sunday school or have their own separate children's services, this would apply in that context as well.
And one would expect that there would be children in child care.
Absolutely. Absolutely, Ken. I mean, this is just an egregious overstep of the state government.
So in other words, Bob Smith comes along and says, I identify as a woman. I'm going to wear some women's clothing. You have to call me Barbara. You have to call me ma'am. You have to refer to me as a she. And then when I'm going to use the restroom, I can go ahead and walk into that women's restroom where the girls from child care might be using the restroom at that same time.
Yes, Ken, that's exactly what the state of Iowa is mandating. But it goes further than just privacy rights or safety rights. This is the first time a church has been mandated to do this. And as most of us are aware, many, many faiths and religions have sincerely held religious beliefs on human sexuality and on gender roles. This would apply to a mosque. Many mosques have their services segregated with males on one side and biological females on the other. They would be at odds with the statute. They would be able to undergo prosecution just like our client and this church would. So make no mistake, this is broader than just, evangelical Christian churches even. It would apply to any type of faith that has views on human sexuality that might even be millennia-old religious beliefs.
My goodness. Okay, so tell me what action took place this week.
Right, well, what we did, and let me unpack, there was a one-second part of this mandate I wanted to make sure to hit on because I don't think this could be overstated enough. The second part of the mandate requires churches to not speak or preach or teach in a manner that would be considered offensive to someone or make someone feel unwelcome on matters of gender identity and sexuality. So if you attend a church...
Yeah, go ahead. Finish that sentence because I think it's like we buried the lead. This is explosive. this is a bomb right here, folks. If you're doing something else, put down what you're doing and tune in to this next sentence. Go.
That's right. We've all heard about the transgender bathrooms, but let me tell you, the main focal point and concern for us is that the fact that a church has a doctrine written down about their biblical views of marriage means that that church can undergo prosecution. If a pastor does a marriage ceremony and reads from the Book of Common Prayer, which is 500 years old, and someone feels unwelcome because of the prayer, they can file a complaint, and the CRC can bring the full weight of the law against that church and pastor.
Ladies and gentlemen across the country, I hope you are listening to this. 5 years ago, not only was this inconceivable 5 years ago, but when religious liberty lawyers said, when these laws were being passed, would say, you know, you could actually use this to go after churches the way you've written it. The liberal left pushed back. They said, oh, you're scaremongering. Oh, that's a boogeyman argument. Oh, that's crazy. You're just trying to stoke up fear. And what, folks, it's happening right now, right here, right now. They are flat out saying, government officials are saying, are churches exempt from this? And they come back and say, sometimes. And then when you're not exempt, whoa, okay, what kind of things are we not exempt from? When you open your doors for Sunday service, that's when you are subject to prosecution if you do not go along with the LGBT agenda that is conflicting with your religious liberty. This is as real as it gets. Chelsea, so yes. What happened today in light of this? And again, if your hair is not on fire, then you really haven't been listening to this, because this impacts the very heart of the First Amendment, and it goes right to the core of your religious liberty. No matter where you stand on this issue, none of us want to live in a country where the government can come after a church that refuses to abandon biblical teaching or church doctrine on questions about what human beings are all about, and that they can't even preach that stuff from the pulpit. Okay, Chelsea, so what happened this week?
Yes, Ken, this is absolutely a wake-up call to churches and Christians everywhere in America. So we decided to send a demand letter to the Iowa Civil Rights Commission and essentially demand that they provide our client Cornerstone. It's Cornerstone World Outreach is our client. Pastor Kerry Gordon is the pastor there. Demanded that the CRC provide our client an exemption, saying that they are not subject to this public accommodations mandate, and furthermore, that the CRC will not be enforcing this against churches. It's the best case scenario we can imagine is that the CRC comes to its senses and does the right thing in the next 30 days and decides to afford this exemption.
And so we're giving them 30 days, and then if they do not come out with a, so I take it this is something where we're looking for a response here in terms of saying, I mean, something flat, clear, and unequivocal that
Yes. You
are not in danger under this. If we don't get Yes. That kind of response, what's the next step? We've
yes,
got
they can avoid
40 seconds.
Liability by saying we won't infringe on your First Amendment rights. But if they don't, We're prepared to take this all the way to the courts and litigate this in order to protect the churches and Christians of the state of Iowa.
This is just stunning, folks. I mean, we're talking here. There are multiple First Amendment rights here. I mean, it's not just the free exercise of religion. It's free speech. There are things that they're saying you cannot say. There are things that they're saying you have to say. If that's a man and he calls himself a woman, you have to call himself a woman. This is just amazing. It's absolutely stunning. We've been with Chelsea Heumann with First Liberty Institute. Check out more about the incredible facts of this case at firstliberty.org. Thank you so much, Chelsea.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association and American Family Radio. One of the places we'll visit on our spiritual heritage tour of Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon is the United States Marine Corps Memorial, also known as the Iwo Jima Memorial, built in 1954 and the largest bronze statue in the world. Stephen McDowell, who's the president of the Providence Foundation, a historian, will join us all along the way, answer questions, talk about the people, the places, and the events in our nation's capital, and then on to Mount Vernon, the home of George Washington. In addition, we'll go to Colonial Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown for those who want to join us for this separate trip, which just precedes the Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon tour. For all the information on either of these tours, just visit us on the website, spiritualheritagetours.com. Again, this is in September, go to the website spiritualheritagetours.com.
This is A Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson. The pursuit of holiness, what we place before our eyes does impact. I remember as a younger father sitting down on the floor with my then 4-year-old son. We were watching a video of a circus act where the baby elephant put its front feet upon the back of the adult elephant and went around the arena. Guess what? My 4-year-old wanted to do likewise, so with me on all fours, my son acted out the part of the baby elephant. Surprising? Not really. What we place before our eyes does impact. I've got the attention, I think, of many listening right now, as you know well what I'm talking about. Not much, though, is said in these days about the destructive impact of pornography. Many pulpits, too, may be silent on this subject, but God's Word and His Holy Spirit aren't. Pursue holiness. Place no wicked thing before your eyes, that God would be glorified and that your heart, mind, and soul would be kept pure. This is A Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson.
Hi, this is Steve Tiber, president, co-founder of 8 Days of Hope. 8 Days of Hope was meant to be a one-time trip to Bay St. Louis, Waveland, Mississippi, after Hurricane Katrina. And then God got involved. And since then, we have been to 9 different states, rebuilt 1,700 homes, and it's all because we love Jesus. God tells us to love Him and love others. And that's what we do, either through 8 Days of Hope or a new ministry called Hope Reigns. Hope Reigns goes immediately after disaster. A tornado, a flood, a fire, a snowstorm. But what we notice with disasters is right after disaster, there's so many ministry opportunities. We've already been to New York, Illinois, Tennessee, Texas. So if someone's interested in 8 Days of Hope or Hope Reigns, the best place to go is our website, 8daysofhope.com. And even though we might not have an event planned the day you go to the website, if you give us your email address on our website, we'll be able to contact you about future events.
And America, we're back. This is Ken Klukowski, guest hosting here at Washington Watch, talking faith, family, freedom, and the real news going on that's impacting you and your country. That was an explosive segment in the last one talking about religious liberty and how Iowa government officials are now telling houses of worship, pure houses of worship, churches, that when they're open to the public, they must abide by the state's sexual orientation and gender identity law, including while services are ongoing and children are in child care, that a man who identifies as a woman has to be able to use all women's restrooms during that time, that women can use men's restrooms, and stunningly, for those of you who are just joining us, that the law forbids, when the building is open to the public, anyone in the church saying something against the LGBT agenda, that they cannot preach traditional biblical sexual morality or consistent with their faith tradition, that if they do so, they can be accused, that an LGBT person can file a complaint with the state that they have created a hostile speech environment, and that the state attorney general can actually pursue that house of worship. We're turning now to my next guest, Joel Pollack, senior editor at large at Breitbart News Network, also the editor for the Breitbart vertical called Breitbart California. Joel is a brilliant guy, graduate of Harvard Law School, political activist, and his new book, See No Evil, 19 Hard Truths the Left Can't Handle, will be published on July 25. And when it is published, we will have Joel back on here talking about that book and why all you folks should check it out. Joel, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Great to be with you, Ken.
Now, I don't know if you were able to catch anything of that last segment, but it's First Liberty Institute is involved in just something that, as I said in the last segment, this is something that 5 years ago was inconceivable. That when constitutional lawyers were saying, "Hey, these laws could actually be used to go after houses of worship," the left said, "Oh, you're scaremongering. That's a boogeyman. That would never happen." And now we actually see that happening. Now, let me ask. I mean, you're an Orthodox Jew in Jewish worship. In the Orthodox tradition, men are sitting separately from women. Is that correct or no?
That's correct. Men sit separately from women during prayer time. They don't have to sit separately during sermons or social times or anything like that. There's not sort of a general separation of women in all but a few very small sects. The purpose is to make sure people are concentrating on prayer and not on each other, recognizing that there's a basic human instinct to look around and be attracted to other people. And also, as my wife points out, there's a liberating aspect of it for women because it means that they're not attached to their husbands when they stand before God. You know, if you lose your husband, unfortunately, as does happen to women, especially as people get older, you come back to the synagogue and you're still who you are. You don't feel lesser because you can't sit next to your husband anymore. Mm. So there's a number of reasons people do it. Some people don't like it, so there are some synagogues that are less traditional. But yes, traditional Orthodox Judaism does separate the sexes, and in the morning prayers, there is a traditional blessing where men thank God for making them men, or saying not making them women is actually the phrasing, and women thank God for making them as they were. Now, this is a very controversial blessing, but it's been part of the tradition for hundreds of years, and there are theological reasons it's in there. Joe Lieberman, when he ran for vice president, was actually asked about this by a understandably skeptical media. Do you say this? This sounds like it's anti-woman. And he said, well, it's not anti-woman, but I don't say that part of the prayer. You know, and that's up to him. But if you're saying by statute or by judicial decision, whatever the reasoning is, that you can't distinguish among genders and you can't say, I'm glad I'm a man, and you can't say, if you're a woman, I'm glad God made me as I am. In other words, you know, I'm not transgender, I'm a woman. If you can't say those things, the law or ruling or whatever would violate the First Amendment because it would essentially ban traditional Judaism. I mean, that's a blessing that is said, traditionally at least, every morning in every morning prayer. And again, there are theological reasons for it, some of which actually have to do with very ancient disputes with Christianity and aspects of Paul's teachings that the rabbis wanted to distinguish from their own beliefs. And, you know, that we can get into that another time. But
yeah, sorry to mess with your game there.
Yeah. But the basic principle is the same as in the Christian faith, which is that God made men and women as they are. And, you know, I personally don't have a problem if people want to live differently. But in a house of worship, you know, I'd expect that my faith would be respected, certainly within the confines of that prayer and that building. And yes, you're right. A few years ago, they said it wasn't going to happen, but people have agendas, and those agendas don't stop when they win one court case. There just is no boundary. People are looking to remove any obstacle to their own beliefs. It's almost a religious crusade against religion.
Yeah, and this is absolutely stunning. And in fact, because we were bringing you on to talk about Jim Comey, if you're able to stay, if we're able to carry over into the next segment here, because I loved getting your perspective off that, because you know there are those who try to narrow the defense of these things by saying, oh, these are just, you know, these are just over the top Christians pushing their own agenda and whatnot. It's in your case, it shows that no, actually, it's this impacts various religious minorities and not stuff that some people have never heard about, like, you know, Zoroastrianism or whatever. But to say this is another one of the great faiths on planet Earth, Judaism, and that this would directly assault some of the centuries-old practices of observant Jews all over the place, and including right here in America.
That's right. And there are all sorts of ways in which gender is important to Judaism. There are also ways in which, you know, and some of these aren't politically correct, but there are ways in which having an intact body that is identifiably male or female gives you a kind of theological status that having some kind of a deformity does not. That's not to say Judaism.
Joel, we're going to have to cut out. We're going to a hard break here, but we'll be back in 2 minutes, and then we're on to talk about Director Comey and the huge news today.
Sounds good.
Be with us again.
Making the most of your money, here's Dan Celia.
How do we know where the balance is between saving more money or paying off our debt? Well, it's a difficult question to answer, but I'll say this, that it's about prioritizing. Look, you've got to want and work hard to get out of debt. There's no doubt about it. But if you're working to get out of debt, you're doing nothing as far as savings goes. You're setting yourself up to getting in more debt. You have to balance it. Take one credit card or one piece of debt at a time, usually the smallest one, so that you can feel like you're accomplishing something. And if you have discretionary income every month of, say, $50, then you need to find a balance of putting some of that towards the debt, maybe $25, and the other $25 into savings. See, I don't think it's a good idea to sacrifice either one of them. I think you have to find a good balance to try to accomplish both. Make sure that you continue to save as you're paying off your debt. Now, at some point in time, you're likely to build your savings to where it's adequate, to where you feel as though, hey, if my transmission goes or whatever the situation is, I'll be able to pay for it. And you can commit a little bit more to getting out of debt. The other thing is, look at what you're cutting out of your lifestyle, and anything that you cut out of your lifestyle, put that towards your debt as well.
Experience Dan Celia in person. Find a faith, family, and finance town hall meeting or seminar near you at afafoundation.net.
And we're back, America. This is Ken Klukowski, guest hosting Washington Watch for Tony Perkins. We are talking with my friend and colleague Joel Pollack, senior editor at large for Breitbart News. Joel was kind enough to be able to stay on with us because he's got news that he's been breaking off of the just incredible testimony today, earlier today, of FBI Director Jim Comey giving sworn testimony before the U.S. House of Representatives regarding his decision not to recommend felony criminal prosecution of Hillary Rodham Clinton, despite acknowledging that crimes may in fact have been committed, that they had evidence that crimes were committed in that regard. But Joel was kind enough to give us his perspective, talking about the SOGI laws, to understand that this is not just an issue that is concerning for people of one faith, but for observant people of faiths across the board, that opposing government action on such things is to oppose nothing short of just a fascist insistence that everyone must adopt the new national orthodoxy and must even abandon their sincerely held religious beliefs if they disagree with it. Of course, the founders of this country took a stand and put their lives on the line, codifying in the First Amendment of the Constitution everyone's fundamental rights to free speech, religious liberty, and exactly this kind of freedom of conscience. So, Joel, we've appreciated your perspective on that. But let's turn now to the news of the day. And folks, as we get done with Joel after this segment, we want you calling in, sounding off on everything you've heard today. Let us know what you think at 866-372-7234. Again, 866-372-7234. You can call in now. We'll be opening up those lines as we come back from the break. But we want America to sound off on all these things. Joel, today, Jim Comey, before the U.S. House, hours of testimony. Everyone was watching. Of course, we had Congressman Jim Jordan on this program yesterday. We had you on yesterday teeing all this up. Tell us what the takeaway is.
I think the takeaway is that Comey's argument that there was not sufficient intent to prosecute has basically fallen apart. And it's fallen apart in two ways. I think the most significant was Trey Gowdy's questioning when he pointed out that as a prosecutor, you almost never have direct evidence of intent where someone says, hey, I intend to break the law. But you almost always have circumstantial evidence. And Gowdy walked through the circumstantial evidence in this case, and it is overwhelming. And that was very effective. He also made the point that Comey and the FBI had read intent into a statute where it doesn't exist. And not only that, but they had read specific intent instead of general intent. Now, for the lawyers who are listening, this is review, but there are crimes of specific intent and crimes of general intent. And what Comey seemed to be saying is that they can't prosecute Clinton unless she had the specific intent to harm the United States. That's pretty much the highest standard you can get to in a crime like this. And one could make an argument, I suppose, that based on past case history, which is the argument Comey made, they don't prosecute people for this crime unless they intend, or unless they have intent, even though the intent isn't in the statute. It's just a statute of gross negligence. But Comey really kicked it up a level. He seemed to be bending over backwards to find reasons not to prosecute Hillary Clinton. So that was the first thing. But then Committee Chairman Jason Chaffetz from Utah had a withering line of questioning toward the end, where he asked Comey repeatedly, did Hillary Clinton give access to classified information to people who did not have clearance to receive it? Now, Comey tried to argue that she didn't do so intentionally, but he had to say, yes, she did actually give classified information to people, whether it was the administrators of her private email server or her lawyers, that did not have security clearance and could have been viewing classified emails or information. But he had no answer, and Chaffetz really ran through him on that. And Chaffetz said, well, I don't understand how you're not prosecuting her. She intended to give this information to people. She intended, particularly with lawyers, because by the time that came around, she had reason to know that there was suspicion of classified information among her emails. She gave them these emails. They were not authorized to see them, review them. Comey wasn't sure whether they had read them or not, but certainly she claimed they had read them. So after that, it was really just, there was very little left of Comey's.
Yeah, that's huge. That's explosive. Did they get into, and because I actually haven't checked it myself. Again, let's you and I go law geek for 10 seconds here. I mean, did they talk about the mens rea component for sharing classified information? Folks out there, everyone, that means the mental state that you're in when you're committing a crime. I mean, is it that you have to intentionally share classified information with the person without clearance, or is it knowing, or are we again to negligence or gross negligence there?
There was some discussion of that standard and that requirement early on, and Comey tried to say she didn't have the idea of knowingly transferring classified information. But later on, it just fell apart. They didn't really revisit that. The Republicans really pressed the idea that there had to have been knowledge, that there was classified information on these emails. And again, you couldn't have direct intention of, it was hard to provide direct evidence of intent, but as a prosecutor, Gowdy said, he had certainly prosecuted people who didn't know what they were doing was illegal, but did it anyway. It's not that they had to know that even, he said, I prosecuted a lot of dumb people, even people who didn't know you couldn't kill another person.
Right, and that's where I appreciate having Gowdy on this. As a former U.S. attorney, having a prosecutor there, I mean, we've only got 20 seconds here, but I'm glad that they're drilling down on this. In 10 seconds, what do you see coming up next, or do you think this is the end?
The big takeaway is the House is going to refer Clinton for investigation for perjury, and that came out at the beginning of the hearing, exactly the point that you raised with Representative Jordan yesterday, so that's big news.
Folks, we've been with Joel Pollack with Breitbart News. Check him out, Breitbart.com. Thanks so much.
Do you enjoy history, museums, pandas, and national monuments? And are you looking to gain work experience at a Christian organization in the heart of our nation's capital? If the answer is yes, come spend a semester as an intern in Washington, D.C. with a Family Research Council. You will get a chance to experience the rich history and culture of our nation's capital and attend congressional hearings, events, rallies, and lectures all over D.C. Further, you will develop your skills in research and writing about the sanctity of life, marriage and family, religious liberty, and many other policy issues. Family Research Council's internship program includes free housing just a block away from Capitol Hill and the Supreme Court, as well as a paid stipend. As an intern, you will gain invaluable public policy experience in a professional work environment under the oversight and mentorship of FRC experts and scholars. To learn more and apply to the program, visit frc.org/internships. Again, that's frc.org/internships.
I'm Miki Addison of Airing the Addisons on Urban Family Talk. When Jesus spoke of eating his flesh and drinking his blood, many of his disciples turned away, saying, "This is a hard teaching." How do you react when you run across something difficult in the Bible? I invite you to meditate on the sobering truths of God's Word instead of the pervasive feel-good musings that delight our flesh.
Hard Truths, a one-month devotional for those unwilling to turn away, by Miki Addison. Available now at afastore.net.
The Decision America Tour with Franklin Graham.
I'm traveling to all 50 states to hold prayer rallies. We're asking Christians to vote for candidates that stand for biblical principles and biblical moral values and engage in your community by living and sharing your faith.
The Decision America Tour with Franklin Graham.
And I'm going to be sharing the gospel.
You'll find rally dates and locations, plus information on how you can be involved at DecisionAmericaTour.com.
Now is the time to take a stand.
What's at stake at this election? A lot. From the freedom to publicly practice and proclaim your faith, to the nomination of Supreme Court justices, matters of critical importance to Christians are looming in the days ahead. Family Research Council and FRC Action stand at the forefront of this battle. In these turbulent times, we trust in God's Word that He is for us and that He will give us a future and a hope of prosperity. That's why we invite you to join us on September 9th through 11th in Washington, D.C. for the Values Voter Summit. Come to learn, be encouraged, and meet others who will stand for the renewal of this great nation. You'll hear the latest on the threats to our nation's security, your religious freedom, the privacy and safety of our children and grandchildren, and much more. Visit valuesvotersummit.org for more information and to register. That's valuesvotersummit.org.
All right, my fellow Americans, we are back for the final segment in Washington Watch today, and we are opening it up for your calls. You've heard a couple great Americans share their insights, their thoughts. We've broken some stunning news here today. But now we want to know how you respond to this. After all, this show is about you. In our democratic republic, the question is, what are millions of faithful Americans now thinking? How do we process this? What do we do about this? We want you to tell us pros and cons. You know, if you like what you're in, let us know. If you think these guys are just dead wrong, we want to hear that too. Come on, throw down, make your case at 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. The lines are open and the boards are just lighting up. And we're starting off with Troy in Nebraska. You're on Washington Watch.
Hello?
Hello, Troy. You're on Washington Watch. This is Ken Klukowski.
Hey, thanks a lot. I really appreciate you giving me the opportunity to sound off. I just wanted to comment on this situation with Hillary Clinton and the FBI. It's just an amazing thing to me to consider that this is just as another continued ongoing thing that's happening in the Democratic Party with these people. Our Justice Department was involved with Bill Clinton. Our FBI was involved. You know, with this, the State Department's involved, and it almost seems like parts of our government are making their bed with evil.
Do you think it's time to clear house, Troy?
Oh, God, I think it's something's got to happen. If I did something like that, I'd go to jail for sure.
You do not sound like a Hillary Clinton voter.
Yeah, I'd go to jail. She is responsible. The State Department is responsible for the death lives of those people in Benghazi. You know?
Yeah, folks, if you haven't seen that, what Troy is talking about, check out the movie 13 Hours, and it will blow your mind, the true accounts from eyewitnesses of what happened in Benghazi. Troy, thanks so much for sounding off. We appreciate you listening. Turning now to Becky from Alabama. Becky, you're on Washington Watch.
Thank you. I appreciate what y'all do, you know, all the people that speak and everything. But, you know, a lot of it is so negative. And, you know, Christ died for all of us. He died for this nation. He died for Israel. And he died for every nation. And, you know, we need to understand or repeat, let's just say, I'm sure we understand it, but repeat that he won this war. It's a won war. He won it at Calvary. And he said it's finished when he was hanging on the cross. And this is a finished work of the Lord. And we need to have faith that he's finished it. And he's a miracle-working God. And I think he's going to do some miracles. I think we're not focusing on, you know, the miracles he will do if we just believe he's going to do them. We've got to believe him and not just go all overboard on all the negatives, because that's Satan.
Well, I'll tell you, I pray that the Lord does come through with a miracle on a lot of that, because I, you know, as someone who's in this fight every day, I mean, I face some challenges where I see no earthly way that I can prevail on this or on that. So ultimately, it's in the Lord's hands. At the same time, every Christian is called upon to be in the world and yet not of the world, in a world that we're told is under the curse of sin, one that is fallen, one that is beset by sin, and that we are called upon to work, that we're called upon to struggle, Becky, that we are told to pray and to trust as if it all relies upon God and there's nothing for us to do, but that we are to work as unto the Lord every day as if it all depends on us. But a wonderful reminder from Becky that ultimately we have all read the end of the book, so we know how this story ends, and that's wonderful news. Thank you, Becky. Turning now to Marty from Illinois, you're on Washington Watch.
Is this from Marty in Illinois?
It's my caller board says Marty from Illinois, okay. So I hope that's you.
Okay, it's me. And thank you for taking my call. And what I want to talk about is...
Is your name Marty, and are you from Illinois?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
I've got the right person. Go ahead, Marty.
Okay, I agree with everything Tori said. Now, what Becky has come on with was talking about... Sounds to me like we're just going to sit back and wait for God to do it all. He said, when the enemy comes in like a flood, the Lord will raise up a standard against him. And I believe we're that standard. And... I wanted to talk about, I agree with everything Tori said, so I don't have to say that. But what I'm going to say is about this law that Iowa is trying to pass.
Yes. In fact, already passed. Already okay. Passed. And that's where First Liberty is ready to throw down with a federal lawsuit to vindicate the rights of churches, Christians, and people of other faiths, like my friend Joel, who's an Orthodox Jew, if, in fact, the state of Iowa does not reverse itself and explicitly repudiate that it will ever violate the First Amendment rights of Iowans through this statute. Go right ahead.
And that's abominable. But what I want to say is I was even speaking to one of my granddaughters about what Target has done, and she kind of took an attitude of, well, she says, you know, and they still shop there. And so I said, that's kind of what sounds like Becky's doing. I can't say. But now I'm almost 80 years old. I don't have the best heart, but thank God he's helped me to get this far. And the thing of it is, so first it's your... It's your stores and your schools, and now it's in your churches. And coming probably to our state before long, I don't know. But if it does, we're certainly not going to want to tolerate. See, we're the only people that have to tolerate things. Other people don't have to tolerate us.
Yeah, and here, of course, what LGBT activists are doing, it's gone, you know, years ago they were saying tolerance. Now it's not about tolerance. That's right. They don't tolerate us one bit. And this is about enforced celebration. You won't just you will not just accept what I do, but I am going to compel you. You must say words celebrating it. You can't even say words disagreeing with me. And if you're And if your Bible or your faith disagrees with that, then you just need to throw that out because I demand to be celebrated and to get these special rights. Hey, Marty, we appreciate your perspective, and yeah, this is a tough fight, and it is a real fight, and we so appreciate your support. Turning out, and folks, tell me if you think I'm wrong. You know, if I love it when people agree with me, but you know, I've been married almost 16 years, and you know, there are people like my wife who might not agree with me on every single thing. And so one time she said to me, "But if I agree with you, then we'll both be wrong." And so you just have to. And she says it with a smile. You just have to love it. But I'll tell you, it's this isn't about an echo chamber. If you're wrong, call in and tell me I'm wrong at 866-372-7234. But we're turning now to David from Alabama. David, you're on Washington Watch.
Hey, just a quick comment. The Hillary vote, I kind of liken this to the acquittal of O.J. Simpson. I think that was a giant step backwards for our country. There were people celebrating in the streets, and I think most people kind of thought he was guilty, and I kind of see this the same way. But I'll say this: I'm recently got involved with a college group at our church, and I would challenge all your listeners just to get plugged in and get involved and talk to your kids, your grandkids, your college age kids about the political system and ask them their beliefs. They're still very teachable even at that age, and you would be amazed at some of the questions that you get from kids that have been in church all their life. So I would just challenge all your listeners to get involved, and I'll hang up and listen to you.
I appreciate that, David. And folks, find a good church, a church that will teach the gospel of Jesus Christ, that will adhere to the Bible. Go there, listen to it, check it out. And I think if it's not something that you're familiar with, I know many of our listeners are, but some are not, you may be amazed in what you find, and I guarantee you it'll be worth your time. Turning now to David from Texas, same name but different state, from the Lone Star State. David, you're on Washington Watch.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much for having me. Man, I'm going to be honest with you. I'm kind of excited, thinking and hoping that justice will finally be served for all those that lost their lives, you know, and all this that's going on with Hillary Clinton. But what has me flabbergasted is the way that Mr. Comey kept trying to defend Hillary Clinton. I mean, the evidence is so overwhelming. I mean, she's as guilty as a kid caught with their hand in the cookie jar. I mean,
Absolutely, David. And in fact, I think one statement that he made that I think a lot of people took exception to is when he said no reasonable prosecutor would bring a case on these facts. Now, after that, a whole bunch of federal prosecutors, people like Andy McCarthy and Shannon Coffin and a former U.S. Attorney General, Michael Mukasey, went public and said, well, I would bring a prosecution on these facts. And, I mean, unless Jim is trying to say that I'm just an unreasonable man, evidently there are some reasonable prosecutors who would like to bring that. So I take David, I'm sensing frustration from you. You are not content with the status quo.
Yes, sir.
Well, we all have choices to make on this, and you know, there's an election coming up, and golly, wouldn't you know it, the target of this felony criminal investigation against whom so much evidence had been presented now wants to become the President of the United States and the Commander-in-Chief in charge of the awesome military might of this nation. That's something some people may want to think about. Again, Washington Watch does not endorse presidential candidates, and I am just speaking in my personal capacity. It's not an endorsement to say, folks, we have to seriously think and consider the stuff that we're learning about this. Turning now to Nathan from Indiana. From my home state, the Hoosier State, the crossroads of America, the great state of Indiana. Nathan, you're on Washington Watch.
Hoorah. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely.
I got to tell you, one of my big concerns, so I'm a Christian. I consider myself a normal American. I spent 22 years on active duty in the United States Marine Corps.
Appreciate your service, Nathan.
6 years as a contractor in Afghanistan and Iraq. And I got to say, I'm not a non-violent person. I know what I do. I know what my tendencies are. And when I'm talking to just normal Americans, my friends and people I know, they've gone past the point of saying, how are we going to fix this? I hear people talk about, you know, if they come to get my guns, I'm going to fight. And it's not just one or two people. It's a lot of people. And a lot of people have almost, it scares me, that it seems like they've gone past the point of rational thought, and they've gone into this world where they feel like they've got to fight. And what troubles me is that politicians keep pushing the buttons on normal Americans, and I'm afraid that violence is going to erupt out of all this.
Well, I'll tell you, Nathan, I think that's I hear what you're saying, and I think we all pray that that violence would never happen. These are incredibly challenging times. I mean, we are facing challenges like we've been talking about earlier in this show, things that were unthinkable 5 years ago. Now, ultimately, in a democratic republic, we get the government that we deserve because ultimately we get the government that we vote for. And this is a perfect example. You know, all of this stuff that half of this show has been about, it's all been piling up on one person who is going to be one of two people to become the next president of the United States. And it's all a question about whether the American people are going to tolerate that. I think people are really mad, Nathan. That's the sense that I get. They've wanted it to be fixed, and they've seen things become so challenging so quickly that they have become gravely concerned. They feel deeply disrespected. They feel threatened. And we need to pray, and each of us work to reach a solution to these things where we can right this ship, clean out this house, and get everything back to what things should be in that regard. Thank you, Nathan. Turning now to Ethan from Mississippi. Ethan, you're on Washington Watch.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. What can we do for you?
I just want to bring up a statement. If you're talking about the same man who was assistant director for the Whitewater scandal, which you saw everyone involved with that prosecuted except for the Clintons, and then you expect something different to happen when he was director of the FBI, I wasn't expecting anything different from the same man.
I hear you, Ethan. And, you know, Jim Comey has a fantastic job around town as being a guy who's not a partisan, of being a guy who's been independent and a lawman and all that. But a lot of people, and so I'm not going to gainsay that because people who have known him for a long time say some really good things about him. But as we saw today with Trey Gowdy, with Jason Chaffetz, with the questions that he was being pressed on today before Congress, I mean, his answers just don't hold up. And I'll direct everyone to Breitbart News, to the write-ups that my colleague Joel Pollack and a few others have been writing, and that I'll be writing later on tonight, unpacking some of this stuff. I mean, some of his answers just don't hold up. I mean, gross negligence was clearly present in the mishandling of classified information, and federal law says that is a felony. Ethan, thank you for calling in. Folks, that's all the time we have here for Washington Watch today. I have been your host in for Tony Perkins, Ken Klukowski, again, senior counsel at First Liberty Institute. So if you want to see what we are doing fighting for your religious liberty today, the largest law firm in the country exclusively dedicated to it, check us out at firstliberty.org. Feel free to sign up for our updates, get support, and for the real news going on in America, go to Breitbart.com. Folks, God bless. Thank you. See you next time.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.